I want your feet all around me.
I would absolutely not expect you to love me anymore.
I would be really fucking sad.
Maybe.
What?
Yes, we got a few segments. We got Reddit stories of the week, some motivational stuff, and some OnlyFans marketing tips. All right, so let's get into some of these Reddit stories of the week.
Okay, this one is just a question, not so much a story. This one is, what is one thing you wish that you were good at, but you aren't, no matter how much you try it?
So do you want to answer or do you want to look at the comments first?
I want you to answer first. Because I'm really curious to know.
What is one thing you wish you were good at but aren't, no matter how much you try it?
Yeah, because, okay, one thing that I can say about you is that you're fucking like one of those people that is good at everything. Like, we try a new sport, we try a game, you're always the one that wins. You draw something that you've never drawn before, you're great at it. You can make fucking, make a sculpture. Like, you're so naturally good at everything and it's annoying.
The one that comes to mind is like being more expressive. Like we've already gotten called out at least 10 times on this podcast from people that are like, you're so monotone, you guys don't have any chemistry. And that's mostly just because, yeah, I'm pretty like monotone when I speak, and it's just what it is. Like, I'm not gonna put on a fake personality for that reason. But if I could get better at something, it'd probably be that, but I just can't.
Like having banter or like being quick-witted and being
not
able to like...
Not necessarily that, because like I'm like, I can put it on like in a social situation, like I can get it done when I need to. But just like, well, like for YouTube, like I have the worst personality to be a YouTuber. I have the worst personality to be a podcaster and stuff like that, because I'm just my natural personality is just very stoic and monotone, and that's just, it is what it is. So, but, and I can like with my other YouTube channel, I can, you know, I those are much more scripted, so I can storyboard those. I can build in the edits and make them a little bit more whatever. But with like this type of format, it's just, this is my actual, the way that I actually show up in the world most of the time.
Yeah. So that's another, I can admit that I watch these podcasts back and I can see that I'm buttoned up compared to like if we were just kind of sitting on the couch alone.
Yeah, she's much more loose in real life, and I'm basically exactly the same in real
life. This is how, yeah, you are already all here.
Yeah.
You have arrived.
Yeah. Okay, but what's the thing that, what's the thing that you wish you were good at, but you can't, no matter how hard you try?
I wish that I was better at, it might take me a couple sentences to unpack what I'm saying, but like going to the gym, like not bodybuilding, but like
discipline.
Yeah. I wish I could take some of the discipline from other areas of my life and put it into building muscle and like taking better physical care of my body, which in other times of my life I have been strong, but right now I'm not. And I have tried, and I am not good at it right now.
So, the next Reddit, how do you tell a girl about a fetish? Oh.
Yeah, so I wanted your take on this. So, you saying that you're not like an amazing conversationalist, what would be your approach to this?
The way I would approach it is I would try to ask her what her fetishes are and then kind of use those as a mechanism to segue into maybe some common ground.
And what if she was like, yeah, no, I don't have any.
Well, she's got to have some. And if she's not.
No, some people really don't. Like, I'm really just not, I'm like asexual. I'm just not there sexually.
And it's like, what is the fetish? Like, because depending on how weird it is, like determines if you would bring it up or not, I guess.
Well, and then that's subjective also, because it's like
I didn't realize until you started OnlyFans, like I knew the foot fetish was a thing, but I didn't realize how many dudes are into that.
It's incredibly common, but I think there's still a lot of people who are weirded out by it.
Like it's not something I'm into, but I'm not like weirded out, I guess, by other people that are. It's just like whatever. But then there's like other fetishes where...
But from a girl's perspective, like if I went on a date, okay, take away all the experience that I have in this industry. If I went on a date, I had never heard of a foot fetish before, and a guy shows up and he's like, I'm really fucking into this. I want your feet all around me or whatever. I would be like, what?
So if I asked a girl what hers are and she's like, oh, none, then I probably just wouldn't. I would just let it go.
Yeah.
Should I look at the comments now?
Yeah, I think my answer would be the same.
Okay, so this one says, the path forward here is highly dependent on the specific fetishes you have. Things like bondage, face sitting, even eating ass are becoming very common. Things like pegging and choking are rising up the ranks. But if you want to get into this, into fluids, pain, things that require a free outlet near the bed, that'll change your approach vector. I think you're going to need to tell us your list before we will be able to really help you figure out the path.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think I need more information.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I was saying before. Like you kind of need to, like depending on what it is, kind of depends on how you might go about it.
Yeah.
Okay, am I reading this wrong? What is this? What? Scatting is fun and performative. That's like shitting, right? Or am I not understanding what this is saying? Skibbity doop, bop, bop, doo doo. How can anyone turn this into a fetish?
I think there is something called scat. Let me look it up.
I think I'm missing something there. Okay.
Yeah, so there's scat singing, which is, this says on Wikipedia, originating in vocal jazz, scat singing or scatting is a vocal improvisation with wordless vocalables, nonsense syllables, or without words at all. So, like, yeah, it's from generations ago.
Oh, now I finally understand what that song, The Scat Man, is about.
Yeah, it's not about...
The last 20 years, I thought that song was talking about shit the whole time.
I have no fucking idea what you're talking about.
All right. The next one here. Okay. Am I the asshole? You can read this one.
Okay. This one's called, Am I the Asshole for Leaving My Girlfriend Because She Got Fat? Okay, so I know the title is going to make me sound like a total scumbag, but hear me out. I've been with my girlfriend for 2 years. In the beginning, we used to go to the gym, go for walks, hiking. We would run and train for marathons together. Our whole relationship started from the shared interests that we had together. After about 6 months, she lost all interest in fitness, slowly started gaining weight. I must admit, I have nothing against larger ladies, but for me, my preference is a thin build. She started off at around 7 stone and is currently sitting at 14 stone. The weight gain was crazy fast and extreme. I must admit, I am not really attracted to her anymore. I also started to gain weight by being more lazy with her and eating crappy foods, but I didn't like myself that way, so I lost the weight. I love her, but we no longer share many interests or really do anything together apart from eating out and watching TV. I am nothing special, but I like to take care of myself and my body. I do take pride in my appearance.
What do you think?
This would be something that you have to communicate with her about. If you haven't, you need to talk to her about it and be like, babe, what's going on? Like, this is a little different and I miss doing X with you or whatever. If you were to just get up and bounce, that would be a dick move. I think there's a lot of communication that needs to be happening there. Maybe she's going through something that you haven't been aware of or whatever. a physical issue, a mental issue. And then if it's just, you know, sometimes we get into phases where we're a little bit lazy, you know, you could gently encourage her, do things with her to get her going. But yeah, if you just, yeah, no, I don't think that that's okay.
Yeah, we've had this discussion before, which I, like, this is probably going to be an extremely unpopular opinion, but if I were to become extremely, like, me as a man, I'm aware that you as a female are attracted to certain traits of, like, you know, you're attracted to a man who's ambitious, who has goals, who's doing something, who's healthy, who cares about his body. I'm very well aware that you're attracted to those things. And if I was to become fat, lazy, never work out, not have a job, sit around, drink beer all day, I would absolutely not expect you to love me anymore. That seems completely reasonable to me.
Yeah.
So I don't... And the same is true in reverse. Like, if you completely did a 180 and you completely just gave up on everything without any reasonable, like, it's different if you're, you know, if you have mental health issues and you're working through that and I'm helping you work through that and there's like a team effort and that's great, that's fine. But if you're just like completely like, no, I don't give a fuck, and you just sit around drinking beer all day and become a fat slob and just...
Well, yeah, so there's two elements to it there. It's the... Now there is a lack of shared interests. You're no longer doing things together that were once what brought you together. Like, we like taking good care of ourselves and we do that together. But if you started going out all the time... You know, and I'm going to bed alone every night and getting up at 5 a.m. to work out and you're hungover all the time. We're not spending time together. We're not doing things together, you know, shared interests when we are together. And then, yeah, your body's changing a lot. So there would have to be a lot of communication there. And then if you were like, I'm just not into that anymore, I do think it would ruin our relationship. Even yeah. Now, being together for as long as we have, if you weren't on board with me anymore with our lifestyle, I would be really fucking sad and yeah. It would ruin our relationship.
Yeah, to me that makes, it's, that's like perfectly reasonable. But like, I think like most people are like, oh, you're an asshole, you need to love you unconditionally and... Like all this stuff.
By the way, if you want to join us in the OnlyFans Level Up community, that is where I share all of my best secrets and strategies for OnlyFans creators, many of which are hitting really big numbers, as you may have seen from various guests on this podcast. But either way, it's a great place to be if you want to network or learn all of the best secrets and strategies to grow your OnlyFans account. You can find all of that information with the link down in the description below. But for now, back to the podcast.
Okay, the next one... This is one from Ask Reddit.
What is unacceptable today that was normal 20 years ago? And the first thing that came to mind for me is so bizarre to think about now because you would never fucking see this happening. But when I was, you know, in high school, maybe like 15, 16, what me and my friends would do is we would like work after school and then we would go out to Denny's and like smoke cigarettes and drink coffee as long as we could. I wouldn't say every night, but like regularly. And you just wouldn't see that. Like a couple of 15, 16, 17 year olds out at 2 a.m. smoking cigarettes inside of a restaurant.
Yeah.
Is that legal anywhere anymore?
Definitely wouldn't see that today.
No, it's not here, but.
Well, everything that I was doing 20 years ago was generally unacceptable then, too. So, I don't know. That one's hard for me. Going to someone's house without knowing if they're home.
Oh, yes, this one. So true. If someone came to my fucking door right now and I was not expecting them, no. What do you mean? Why are you here? Don't come here.
Yeah, or just like going to somebody's house and ringing the doorbell.
Yeah, I would never do that.
To like pick them up or whatever.
Nope.
Now you show up to somebody's house, you text them to come out if you're picking them up. When I was a kid, telephones were just becoming commonplace, although quite a few of us had party lines. My parents and grandparents knew the time before telephones. When there's no telephones, dropping by is the only way to see people. Everybody had to be ready to receive guests at any time. When I was in college, 1970s, I walked several miles a day to various friends' apartments to see who was home, who they'd bumped into, and what they'd heard about our mutual friends. This was how we kept up with everybody. This is what everybody did.
I guess that's how it was when we were kids. You grew up, you lived in a normal neighborhood when you were a kid, right? So yeah, would you just go ring your friend's doorbell down the road?
Yeah, you just ride your bike over there and show up. It's
like, can Jimmy play?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What about just generally forcing your kids to go outside? we went on a walk the other day and there was these kids outside playing with sticks.
And I know. I was like,
what the fuck are kids doing outside? Are we in the metaverse right now? Did we just plug into the metaverse these kids are playing with sticks in the metaverse? Like, how are they outside? This is crazy.
Yeah, we never see that. I can't even remember the last time I saw that before.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was definitely outside at least 90% of the time.
Well, and the interesting thing is, like, my son grew up in the time, kind of in that transition period. I sent him outside to play, like, when he was youngish. But he grew up in that. He's definitely like a, I think he's a little bit older than what an iPad kid is considered.
He's definitely more on the modern kid side.
Yeah, he's grown up on the computer, but he was like raised by me who went outside. Like I grew up outside. And so I did send him outside. But I would say by the time he was maybe like 7, 8, he was over it. Like it was just over.
Okay. The next segment we have here is titled Motivational Tea, and I can't remember what this is exactly, but let me pop this open.
I'm going to share a little neuroscience tidbit.
Love it.
But I think it's one that you'll appreciate. Most people don't know this, but there's a brain structure called the anterior mid-cingulate cortex. As we pointed out before, that's a noun, it's a name, it doesn't mean anything. Right. We could call it the cookie monster.
Right.
But what's interesting about this brain area is there are now a lot of data in humans, not some mouse study, showing that when people do something they don't want to do, like add 3 hours of exercise per day or per week, or when people who are trying to diet and lose weight resist eating something.
Right.
When people do anything that they, and this is the important part, that they don't want to do.
Right.
It's not about adding more work. It's about adding more work that you don't want to do.
Yes.
This brain area gets bigger.
Yep.
Now, here's what's especially interesting about this brain area to me. And by the way, I'm only learning this recently because it's new data, but there's a lot of it. The anterior mid-cingulate cortex is smaller in obese people. It gets bigger when they diet. It's larger in athletes. It's especially large or grows larger in people that see themselves as challenged and overcome some challenge.
Right.
And in people that live a very long time, this area keeps its size. In many ways, scientists are starting to think of the anterior mid-cingulate cortex not just as one of the seats of willpower,
right,
but perhaps actually the seat of the will to live.
Yeah, I thought this one was interesting because it's so trendy right now in certain communities, especially among, you know, therapists and things like that, which I'm an advocate for therapy, but I think there's dangerous aspects to it, which we've kind of talked about before in certain scenarios and contexts, where people are either being given permission or giving themselves permission to not have to do anything that they don't want to do. Like, there's this narrative being peddled that's basically like, oh, if it doesn't align with your energy, you shouldn't have to do it. If it's difficult, you know, you shouldn't have to do it. Only do things that, you know, that are in alignment with your energy and just all that kind of stuff. Give yourself grace, you know, all that whole narrative, which, again, I don't disagree with everything about that, but I thought this was interesting because this is kind of the side of the fence that I've always been on when it comes to this stuff, which is like, if you are, which basically what they're saying is, if you do things that, if you basically build this muscle of discipline, it will ultimately allow everything that you believe is hard, everything that you think is difficult, and you're basically excusing yourself from doing that, all those things essentially or eventually become easy and simple if you sort of build this muscle of discipline. And the mechanism to that is doing things that are difficult, doing things that are hard, doing things that you specifically don't want to do. And so for me, like, every time I think about something that I have to do, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. That immediately goes to the top of my list and immediately becomes the biggest priority that I focus on. The more that I don't want to do something, the more, you know, I put it as a top priority of something to do for a lot of these reasons that they're talking about. But I thought it was interesting that they basically said that by building that muscle basically increases your will to live.
Yeah, that is incredible. It reminded me of something that Joe Dispenza talks about, just in the way of like, every time that you recognize yourself in like an old thought pattern or behavior pattern that, you know, you don't want to have anymore, something that you're kind of fighting against in your life, you're wanting to change. Every time that you don't do that and you do whatever it is that you should be or want to be doing instead, you're rewiring your brain for that same-ish concept, like just training your brain for that activity instead of for the old behavior pattern.
Yeah, so that's just something to potentially think about, because I think a lot of people kind of go into their day prioritizing things that they want to do versus things that need to be done but are probably difficult and uncomfortable. But I think just by like kind of switching into this mindset can have huge impacts on people's productivity, their life, everything. All right, so the last thing, we'll get into some OnlyFans marketing tips right here.
Okay, if you have over 1K subs on a paid account, what's the secret? Right now I'm stuck at about 890 to 915 subs, she's talking about. Where do you promote? What makes them stay? I post daily. I have 2 videos up per week, weekly live streams, sexting every night. Why are my subs staying the same? I promote on Pornhub. A new video every other week. Where else do y'all promote and how often? Every day? Because I'm not about to be on Reddit every day posting on 45 subreddits. Damn.
Yeah, so the reason I chose this one is because there's a really big secret when it comes to this. And the secret is not where else do you promote. The secret, at least to me, is basically just changing your mindset about what you're actually focusing on. So to kind of break this down, whether you're stuck at 800 subs, 1,000 subs, or, you know, 100 subs, at some point in time, you know, depending on what strategies that you're using, you're going to start losing the same amount of subscribers that you're gaining on a daily basis. So at some point in time, you're going to hit a plateau. That's true for everybody. And if you're a huge, you know, mainstream influencer, maybe your plateau is 10,000 subscribers. Or if you're a smaller creator, you know, on our level or something like that, you know, maybe it's 1,000, maybe it's 300, whatever. But regardless, at some point in time, you're going to hit a plateau. Now, the secret or the mindset when it comes to this is not necessarily how do I get more active fans. The truth is, your active fans don't actually matter. Now, most people know the follow back strategy, but for the ones that don't, I'll explain it real quick. The follow back strategy is essentially how you build your business, regardless of how many active subscribers that you have. So there are, you know, Chrome extensions out there to where every time you gain a subscriber, you obviously have the ability to, you know, send them messages and pay-per-view and all this stuff. But as soon as that subscriber expires, you no longer have the ability to contact them unless you follow them back. Then you can continue to you know, send them content, pay-per-view, etc. So the follow-back strategy is essentially when you're using, you know, a Chrome extension or a plugin, whatever, some kind of tool that's going to automatically follow back every single subscriber that you get. And essentially what that means is that your database of potential customers is going to grow indefinitely. It doesn't matter how many of them have an active subscription. Let's say, for example, you're getting, you know, 10 subscribers per day. That's 10 potential customers every single day that you're getting that you can potentially offer and sell pay-per-view. That amount, you know, the amount of subscribers that you get is going to grow indefinitely. They might only stay an active subscriber for 1 or 2 months, but your ability to contact them and send them, you know, pay-per-view is forever. So your focus should not be on how do I have 1,000 active fans. Your focus should just be on looking at, you know, what is my entire list? And your entire list is how many people do you follow? How many people have subscribed to you and you now follow them back, giving you the ability to sell pay-per-view? That list is going to grow to 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, 10,000, 50,000 eventually. And that represents your business, not the, you know, active fans that you have. So to me, the secret when it comes to this is, again, not where else do you promote. It's just continuing to build your list, continuing to build your database. Because the way normal businesses work is they spend tons of money to build email lists. Every time you buy a product or service, you're putting in your name, you're putting in your email, and that gives that business the ability to send you emails, offers, and promotions. They're trying to get you to buy stuff. And they're not concerned if you're, you know, paying an active subscription. They just want you to be a part of their email list so that they have the ability to sell you things. And, you know, it actually costs businesses money to have you on that list. So the fact that, you know, in the case of OnlyFans, not only does it cost you nothing to have your list, but, you know, for the active fans that you do have, you're actually making a little bit of money. But your actual business is not the active fans. Your actual business is your entire list that you have the ability to promote to. So hopefully that makes sense and adds a little bit of clarity about just a little mindset shift when it comes to that.
I've had so many subs come back to me from, like, through those methods that end up coming back and being like big spenders, because when they first signed up with me, whatever, they were more busy or this or that, I was less active, whatever the case may be. But then, you know, the stars align and they come back and they spend a ton of money and it happens.
For people that are kind of more familiar with the normal context of business, just look at it like you're building an email list. You know, every time you get a subscriber and you follow them back. That's essentially a new lead, a new potential customer that you now have the ability to contact them forever. And that's really what the entire business revolves around, not necessarily the active fans. Okay, so that was one. And then the next one here. Oh, yeah. So this one, probably most people are kind of familiar with this, but just for the people that aren't. So this one says, anyone ever been DM'd by someone famous? Recently received a Twitter DM from a pretty well-known adult actress with 2 million followers. I have 30,000 on Twitter, so I'm not exactly enormous or anything. She's offering to connect me with her promo manager, and it feels like a scam, but the account looks legitimate. Anyone else ever had a similar experience? So most people have probably had this experience. But if you haven't, basically what this is whatever agency manages this creator. So the thing is, if an OnlyFans manager and OnlyFans agency sends you a DM, you're just going to automatically ignore them. You're just going to some dude trying to, sell me his agency services, I'm out. But if, a creator with 2 million followers sends you a message, then you might be a little bit more inclined to listen. So the way that most agencies get their clients is, they might have one or two big creators that they manage, and then they say, hey, or hopefully they get permission, but they'll generally, talk to the creator that they manage, and they'll say, hey, can we DM people from your account because they're not going to respond to us otherwise. So they'll basically, use that creator's account to reach out to other creators and try to recruit them to their agency because otherwise they'll be ignored. So if we look through the comments here, so this person's basically saying exactly that. It's 11 out of 10, her manager contacting you, not actually her. I had some really famous girls reaching out at one point. It was weird. Is it her? Absolutely not. 0%. It's definitely not her. But a lot of people here are saying, oh, it's a scam. And that's also not true. It's not necessarily a scam, but agencies know that you're not going to listen to them unless it's coming from, or at least looks like it's coming from, the creator herself. Because I've been seeing this come up a lot. And, on one hand, everybody's basically saying it's a scam, which is also not true, but it's also not actually the creator. So it can look like a scam. So hopefully that adds a little bit of clarity to what's going on there.